Good evening, and welcome to Midnight Audio Theater, the weekly show where we bring you new and original audio dramas, be they adventure, mystery, sci-fi, or comedy. I'm your host, Kathy Ranella. And hello again, audio drama fans. Tonight, we are taking a look at the live radio drama performance. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard performance recordings from groups like Atlanta Radio Theater Company and Great Northern Audio Theater. This show, we're showcasing two new groups that have taken up this performance art with gusto. A big welcome goes to Hangman Audio and It's All Been Done Radio Hour. And we'll start our show with the group with the hometown advantage. Created and written by Jerome Wetzel, who saw a void in the Columbus theater community of the live, radio-style show, brought together a troupe of 15 people and began live performances at Pack Rat Comics in July 2015. As shows grew more popular, they outgrew their space and have moved to the Mad Lab Theater in downtown Columbus. They perform once a month, and their next show is tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 p.m. So if you like what you hear tonight, don't miss out on seeing them live on Saturday. The piece we have for you tonight is the second episode of their series, Daniel Kravitz, Chosen One. It's called Get Out.
Our next program is Daniel Kravitz, Chosen One. Daniel is an unhappy antique store owner who has been chapped as the Chosen One to stand up against the ultimate evil.
I am not!
Shush. When we first met Daniel, he resisted the words of Rufus Reginald Rochester, who came to get him ready for battle. Month's story, Get Out, picks up a few days after Daniel battles and defeats a giant worm with teeth and pincers that has caused great destruction in the town. We join Daniel and his sole employee and friend, Abby, in the shop.
Daniel.
I don't want to hear it, Abby.
Daniel.
No. She's looking at me, isn't she? God, what?
We need to talk about what happened.
No, we don't, because nothing happened.
Half of 4th Street is destroyed. As stubborn as you are, even you can't live in denial of that.
I can live in denial of whatever I want to live in denial of. So there.
You're so juvenile.
Are not. Wow. You are.
Wow.
What?
Just wow.
Wow. What?
You are the most ridiculous person that I know.
And so is your face.
You know he's outside, right?
Who?
Rufus.
I never want to hear his name again.
I don't think he's going away. It's been 3 days. And I've seen him every time I've walked in through that door. He's waiting for you.
Well, then he's going to be waiting forever because he does not exist to me.
How can you say that? He hasn't done anything to you.
He shows up and all hell breaks loose. Damn it, Abby. There was a giant worm creature.
I thought you weren't going to talk about it.
Shut up.
None of that was his fault, you know.
Do I know that? How would you know that? We don't know him, and for all we know, he brought that monster here to manipulate me into doing whatever he wants me to do.
He didn't.
What makes you so sure?
I can tell. He's for real. There's real desperation in those eyes.
Well, Abby, just because someone is desperate doesn't mean you can trust them. In fact, desperate people are probably the worst kind of people to trust. They'll do anything.
I didn't say that I trust him, just that what happened out there isn't his fault. Bottom line, he's the only one that seems to know what's going on. Don't you want to be prepared for the next time?
The next time? I've never seen anything like that before in my life, and I certainly don't want to see anything like that again.
But he said that something...
I don't care what Rufy... whatever said. I don't trust him. I don't like him. And he and that shit he brings with him need to go far, far away from me.
Daniel, I thought you wanted something in your life that mattered. You hate this shop.
Are you even being serious right now? You're saying this is what I wanted?
Of course not. But if you have the chance to save people and make a difference in the world...
What makes you even think that this is something that I would ever want? Where are you going?
If you're not going to do this on your own, I'm going to help you.
Do not go out there. Abby Reynolds, turn yourself around right this minute. Hey, get back here. You're fired.
You're fired.
No, do not come back in here with him. Stay out. We're closed. You can't come in.
Rufus, ignore him. That is just how he is. He hates all new people.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
You didn't mean to what? Ruin my life?
I wish I could stop this from happening to you, but you are the chosen one.
Choose someone else.
It's not up to me.
Who is it up to then?
Well, that's actually a good question. Some of our group think that the Aztecs weren't so far off in their belief system, with Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca, while others point to Egyptian god of Ra and the lore of one, and Romans or Greeks and the basis of all kinds of...
Are you effing kidding me? You're talking about mythological gods? Just because I work in an antique shop, that doesn't mean anything.
I'm not talking about gods. I'm talking about more than humans. You see, there are creatures on this earth that modern science doesn't recognize because they're ancient and, well, they've become very good at hiding. But that doesn't mean they don't exist. Yeti, manticores, sphinx, hydra, mermaids, vampires, kraken, demons, and so many others. They used to be much more involved in world affairs, and we have many theories as to why they have largely disappeared. But some still remain, and you are the one that is tasked with protecting us from them and any other supernatural being that would harm mankind.
Yeah. Did your mommy ever tell you that your eyes are brown because you're so full of shit?
My eyes are... Hazel, is the light in the room off? I don't...
Ignore him, Rufus. So how can you help Daniel?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm from an organization founded to support the Chosen One. I've come here to provide knowledge and training to get you ready for your duty.
He said duty.
Daniel!
It's quite all right, Miss Reynolds. Daniel may be the most difficult case yet, but Rufus Reginald Rochester does not give up just because the going gets tough, as you Americans are fond of saying.
I don't know anyone fond of saying that at all. They might say it occasionally, but they aren't fond of it.
So, where shall we begin? Do you have a back room or a storage area with enough space to lay down some mats?
Some mats? Like, to welcome the demons?
No, gym mats. I think the first thing we need to do is work on some basic martial arts.
And I'm pretty sure I told you that you need to get out. Repeatedly. Besides, I already have the fighting side covered. Didn't you see me with that axe?
I must admit, you seem to have a natural talent, as most chosen ones do when their powers kick in. But there are things out there much more dangerous than that worm creature.
What was that creature called anyway? It seems silly to keep saying worm creature.
Well, Miss Reynolds, I haven't the foggiest. I've never actually seen one of those before in my life.
If you've never seen one, how do you know it wasn't that dangerous?
Remember when I said I've worked with 3 chosen ones before? What do you think happened to them?
Okay, seriously, you need to get out now.
Daniel, I'm here to help you.
How come you didn't help the others?
I did, but there's a lot to learn, and you only have a short time to learn it before you start being tested. It's impossible to teach you everything to cope with every situation, and if something we haven't dealt with comes along...
Rufus?
Yes, Miss Reynolds?
I think one of those situations you just mentioned just walked in.
Okay, I don't know who you are or why you have a forked tail and a green skin, but you have to get out. Not like Rufus here gets out, but actually get out.
I am Present the Green. You are Daniel Kravitz?
No, I'm Bluto the Blue. Daniel Kravitz works down the street, 4th door on the right. You can't miss it.
Oh, thank you.
Daniel!
What?
He looks scary. What's he going to do if he walks in the wrong place? Who's he going to hurt?
It's all right, Miss Reynolds. We'll go after him. He looked like the perfect being to start Daniel's training with. Not overly frightening.
Yeah, well, your face isn't overly frightening.
Where's that fantastic battle axe you used the other day?
It's in the back room.
I threw it away.
Yes, and I pulled it out of the dumpster. You don't just toss out such a rare, valuable antique like that, even if it is just a little used.
Okay, if you could please retrieve it, Miss Reynolds.
Of course.
Now, Daniel, what we're going to do is we're...
I never agreed to anything. In fact, I believe I specifically told you to get out.
The time for kidding around is over, young man. Miss Reynolds' concern for your neighbors is most likely warranted. I do not know who this Grezit the Green is, but in my experience, things with forked tails aren't generally very friendly.
I don't think. You're hearing me, all right? I said...
I went to the 4th door on the right. There was no Daniel Kravitz. What are you trying to pull?
Oh my goodness. I am so sorry. Did I say the 4th door on the right? I meant the left. Sorry, stupid me.
No, okay. Thank you.
Was that Grezit again?
Yeah, and he's a smart one. Dangerous, huh, Rufy? Yeah, it looks like the worst thing that guy can do is get annoyed, which I can get annoyed too, but I'm sure no one comes up after me with a battle axe.
I admit, I might be wrong, but I wouldn't be so quick to...
Guys, I'm looking down the street, and that store that you sent him to, the front window is covered in blood.
Do you see what I mean? You cost at least 1, if not several, innocent people their lives.
Give me the axe, Abby.
Good. Finally, you're talking sense. Now, the first thing we need to do is
No. There is no we. There's me. And Pee-wee. That's what I named my axe here. Me and Pee-wee are going to follow Grezit the Green and deal with him. You stay here and make sure that Abby stays safe.
Oh, no way, Buster. I found this axe and I'm coming with you.
Ms. Reynolds, perhaps it would be better if you remained here. I'll accompany Daniel.
Abby, get in the back room.
No.
Abby!
You think Grezit the Green is a fool? Sending Grezit the Green on a wild goose chase? You are not Bluto the Blue. You are Daniel Kravitz.
Oh, Daniel Kravitz. I thought you said Daniel Craftsmith before. I'm sorry, yes, I sometimes do go by Daniel Kravitz.
Oh, well, that seems like a simple mistake to make. I'm sorry I got so angry.
Oh, no worries. Happens all the time. Now that you've found me, how can I help you?
I've come to drink your blood and bathe in your urine, then enslave this town to be my new kingdom on Earth. Your pets will be my sexy sex slaves, and your women my maids. Your children will do the manual labor, and I will kill all the men.
Well, Grezzin, I have to say that that sounds pretty harsh. Besides, I just peed like 5 minutes ago, and so I don't think I have enough urine for you to bathe in. Maybe just your face.
Then I will settle for drinking your blood.
Fair enough. Do you have a blood bag, or, I can pump out a pint for you real quick.
No! Grezzin the Green does not drink blood out of a bag! I will cut your throat and sip right from the spigot as it gushes deliciously over my chests.
See, that just doesn't really work for me.
It does not matter if it works for you or not, Daniel Kravitz. This is what will occur.
Well, how about this instead? Grezzin the Green turns and walks out of here peacefully and doesn't kill any more of my neighbors, and I'll let you live.
That is a weak counteroffer.
This isn't a negotiation. Those are my terms. Take them or leave them.
I will leave them! Leave them where?
On the end of my axe.
Daniel swings the axe at Grezzin, who easily ducks the swipe. Grezzin swipes two of his five claws at Daniel's stomach, but Daniel jumps back just in time.
Top 20 favorite shirts! You monster!
Do not call me a monster! That is a derogatory term for my people! Rude!
For mine, too!
Daniel swings again and misses. Grezzin gets a glancing blow off Daniel's arm, drawing a little bit of blood. Daniel nicks Grezzit's lower knee, drawing a little bit of black ooze. The two combatants circle and swipe, neither getting the upper hand.
Rufus, what are you gonna do? Help him!
I'm trying, Miss Reynolds. I'm not finding anything on Grezzin the Green and the tome I left here. Do you have any other reference books for this sort of thing?
You mean monsters?
Essentially, yes.
Tons, but I have no way of knowing which are legitimate and which are just fantasies.
Well, most roughly 70% real, 30% not, if my past experience holds true. Where are they?
All over the place. Some on this shelf and some back here.
Help me look.
Right, of course.
Guys, you find anything that can help me?
Not yet. Keep distracting him, Daniel.
Oh, sure. Give me the easy part.
Aha, here we are. I think, yes, Grezzin the Green is a deadly demon who has five claws, sharp fangs, a forked tail, green skin. Yes. Quite menacing.
I know all that. Give me something useful.
Do not give him something useful. Put away that book, feeble old man.
Ignore Grezzin. Do not put away that book.
Grezzin manages to shove Daniel over and lunges at Rufus. The book flies across the room. Daniel scrambles to get up and sees Rufus is already flat on his back, Grezzin the Green's fangs dripping down on him. Rufus's glasses quickly fog up over Grezzin's hot breath, and the man braces himself, eyes closed for death.
Daniel, the book says Grezzin can't stand whistling! Whistle!
Grezzin immediately loosens his hold on Rufus and tries to cover his six ears with his five hands. Rufus is still trapped.
It's working! Keep whistling! Then sneak up behind him and cut off his head!
Is that what the book says to do?
Not exactly, but decapitation has to kill almost anything, right?
Well, you'd be surprised.
Daniel manages to get up behind Grezzin. The first whack does not remove the demon's head completely, and Grezzin whirls, angry. Daniel is surprised and stops whistling, stumbling backwards. Grezzin lunges at Daniel.
Good, Miss Reynolds, keep whistling.
Grezzin falls down again, paralyzed at the sound. Daniel gets back up and with two more swings of the axe, completes the job of separating Grezzin's head from his shoulders.
Thank you, Daniel. You saved my life.
Yeah, well, Abby saved me, so I guess we're even.
Not to push things too much, but are you ready to accept who you are and let me help you?
I guess so.
Guys, what are we going to do about this huge mess on the floor?
Ooh.
And all the dead neighbors.
Is this just the beginning for Daniel Kravitz? Or will he fare as Rufus's previous students did? Or will he be blamed for all the death and destruction around him and hauled off to jail? Find out next month in another all-new installment of Daniel Kravitz, Chosen One.
Daniel Kravitz, Chosen One, Get Out, starred Nathan Haley as Daniel Kravitz, Wendy Parks as Abby Reynolds, Shane Stefanchik as Rufus Reginald Rochester, Ryan Yoey as Greset the Green, and was narrated by Chris Allen.
That was Daniel Kravitz, Chosen One, Episode 2, Get Out, from It's All Been Done Radio Hour. For more episodes online and info about their live performances in Columbus, check out their website at itsallbeendoneradiohour.com. And our next group is an eclectic set of talent hailing from Shaker's Cigar Bar in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hangman Radio started in 2014 and has been performing original stories in the style of old-time radio, complete with sound effects and local musicians, headed by Professor Pinkerton and the Magnificents. While the following story isn't a comedic one, it's still compelling. Tonight we have the story of a horrific hotel fire, told from the perspective of the dying victims as it took the lives of over 90 people. This is episode 2 of Hangman Radio's podcast entitled The Newhall House, Flames from Hell.
Welcome to Hangman Radio, where we are recreating the magic of Radio Noir, recorded live at the historic Shaker's Cigar Bar in downtown Milwaukee. Shaker's, the only cigar bar in Milwaukee, features worldly foods, classic hand-shaken cocktails, vintage whiskeys, boutique wines, and of course, personally selected handmade cigars, also served by a very talented staff. Shaker's is located a mere 90 miles north of Chicago. Tonight's original production is based upon actual horrific events which took place on a frigid January night in Milwaukee in 1883. At several intervals, you will hear the cast yell, "Fire!" Do not be alarmed. In the case of an actual fire, the orchestra will break into stars and stripes forever. Imagine, if you will, a time when politicians were on the take, accepting money to look the other way. When some developers were building hotels out of Lincoln Logs and storing diesel oil, gin, and coal in the boiler rooms. Just keep counting that cash. What's the worst that could happen? A time where a fast-growing city has slowed its hustle and bustle to a crawl. Because January is so bitter cold that if you step outside and breathe deeply enough, your lungs will fold into themselves and immediately stick to the ice crystals you just inhaled. Surrounded by bleakness and shades of gray, faint hints of warmth are only memories, yet the strong push on. Hangman Radio now presents the Newhall House Fire, Flames from Hell.
What time is it?
What does it matter?
After 7, I think. I don't know. The sun is up over the lake.
Oh, shh, it's finally quiet. Cool and quiet.
Try not to think about it.
It's still snowing.
Is it?
I can hear the bells. Listen. Can you hear it?
Great swirling clouds of dense smoke and steam. That's all I can see now.
It seems so far away. Jagged monoliths of brick and mortar, whitened by intense heat, rising from the smoking ash.
Only part of the north wall remains. And there, a white tablecloth, thickly coated with ice, dangling from the window frame of what was once the dining room.
A grand hotel.
A death trap.
300 rooms, I remember. I was sleeping, fast asleep in one of those rooms, blissfully ignorant of the flames that would consume it.
Hundreds of souls ripped from their beds when alarm bells began to peal and call them all to judgment.
When we came into this world, we were born under the sentence of death.
When it comes or how it comes, we know not. God only knows.
What is the date today?
I don't know. Already it's hard to remember.
But I want to remember this day. The day that I died. And you, all of you. How many of us perished? 90? Maybe more?
January 10th, 1883.
Morning crept in, and the people of this city awoke and looked out from their frosty, coal-black windows upon the heavens, lit up by the towering flames of the burning Newhall House Hotel.
Imagination cannot depict a scene more terrible. The agony of those imprisoned by the flames and the fearful danger of those attempting to escape.
I remember. I remember.
Against the dark background of bitter tragedy, there were those who proved the shining heights to which the brave and noble spirit can rise.
Others sunk miserably into the pits of despair and human frailty.
And yet, in the end, heroes or the weak of heart, we are one and the same in the sorrows that afflict us and the death that awaits us.
It was my brother who was there at the beginning. My own dear brother, whose courage in the face of the hellish inferno would make him a hero. There he was, William Linehan, at 3:30 on this morning so sharp and cold it could cut a man to his very soul. His eyes were bright for the ungodly hour he started work as the chief engineer of the opulent 6-story Newhall House. A short jog down the stairwell took him from his own little room in the hotel to the desk of the night clerk, Tom Delaney.
Morning, Tom. Anything to report?
It's already a week and a half into January, and already I can't get warm.
All right. I'll throw the furnace on a bit higher, yeah.
I don't know why we endure the winters here.
It makes us stronger than the rest, Tom. Harder.
Yeah, maybe for you, William. Maybe for you.
Well, gain some weight then, Tom. I'll go see about that furnace.
A simple pull on the lever, and the furnace roared to life. My dear brother made quick work of his morning walk through the bowels of Newhall House. It was 20 minutes, maybe less, when William's rounds were interrupted by the agitated voice of the elevator conductor, Mackenzie.
Linehan, come up here quick! There's a fire in the elevator!
William stuck his head into the elevator shaft to witness flames roaring up the walls with such force that the wind swept his hat clear off his head. He called up the servant stairs to the desk.
Oh, God! Tom, where's this fire coming from?
I don't know, but the house is full of smoke.
There's smoke coming up through the elevator. I'm going to see where it's coming from. No! The Michigan Street exit! It's billowing with smoke! It's impassable! Turn the water on, Tom!
I'll telephone the firemen. Hello? Send the fire department to Newhall as quick as you can.
There's no use staying here, Linehan. We'd better call the house. Fire! Fire! Fire!
The elevator conductor rushed to the 3rd floor to alert the sleeping guests there. My William ran to the main floor and reeled off a line of canvas hose, which he dragged upstairs while Tom, the night clerk, took to the sidewalk to direct the number 1 hose cart as it came barreling down Broadway toward the hotel.
Right this way, gentlemen!
Inside the hotel, the blaze was taking on a life of its own, the smoke filling the halls and adhering to no natural boundaries. Panic began seizing hold of any soul fortunate enough to be awake. William began the task of directing the firemen's hoses into the hotel.
Over here, Chief, over here. The flames are rushing up the elevator shaft and through the east wall. They're climbing nearly to the 5th floor already.
Get the chemicals back to the truck. The building is doomed. Just get the people out of here!
Right, come on, quick with that hose.
Come on, quickly!
William ran with all the speed he possessed up the back stairs to the landing and began to yell to those above.
I will help you out. Come toward my voice. I'll get you out of here.
No one responded, but that's where he found me, lying senseless and foaming at the mouth on the landing to the 3rd floor.
Oh, dear God. Here, let's get you out of this smoke.
He hoisted me over his shoulder and hastily made his way down to the stairs, to the office. And all the while, he's speaking to me with such a tender voice.
You work in the kitchen, don't you, dearie?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I've forgotten your name. I'm looking for my sister, Kate. She's the head laundress. Of course, you must have met her. There now, here. You'll be safe here. I must go back up.
He set me down gently near the office and took one last look into my staring and sightless eyes. I wanted to shout to him that my name was Lizzie Anglin and that I'd always made a point to smile at him whenever he passed by me on his way through the kitchen. I wanted him to know that Kate was upstairs on the fifth floor. It was she who called me to wake me up and flee. It was she who tried to save me. But no sound escaped my blistered lips. William had rescued me from the flames, but it was too late. He couldn't have known the insidious black smoke had already done its damage. He ran the entire way to the fifth floor.
Oh, just a few more minutes, dear.
My husband was still snug and snoring in our bed on the fifth floor of Newhall House when I began to shake him awake. I had been up and dressed since nearly 3:30 in the hopes of catching an early train. Mr. Brown required far less time for his morning ritual and preferred to wait until my final hatpin was in place before leaving the warmth of the bed. Wake up! Wake up! Can you hear it? There are fire alarms.
There are false alarms all the time, dear. Don't let it worry you.
Yes. Yes, of course. But I can make out a faint roaring of flames. Please, go out and look.
Oh, the walls are cool. If this was truly a fire, the walls would be hot. Don't you see?
Please, go out and look, husband. Really, I will not be satisfied any other way.
Ah, wife. I've told you that it's nothing. But since you absolutely refuse to let me go back to sleep, I suppose I will have a look.
Mr. Brown reluctantly rose from the bed and opened the door. A thick tendril of smoke met him at the doorway, and he could see flames leaping a foot above the floor around the elevator shaft in the hallway. My husband had never raised his voice to me in our long married life, and his panicked yell struck me with fear.
Prepare to leave the building. My clothes, quickly.
As soon as he was dressed, we ran out into the hallway, only to be driven back by a wall of dense smoke and searing flames.
We can't go this way. There, the bed sheets.
Without speaking, we set about the task of tearing sheets and blankets to make a rope, which would lower us to the balcony, 3 floors below. I could hardly bear to watch my husband tie one end of our makeshift rope to the sewing machine. The icy fingers of hopelessness had already begun to wrap themselves around my heart as flames began to lick at the door.
Climb down!
It's too frail! It will never hold!
I'll go first. If I make it, you must follow me!
Yes! I watched at the window through choking tears as Mr. Brown swung out the fifth-story window and began hoisting himself down. The heat in the room had become unbearable, and I could feel trickling sweat stinging the skin that had already begun to blister on the back of my neck. By the time my husband made it halfway down to the balcony, the caustic smoke filling the room was stinging my eyes and nostrils, sending me blindingly over the windowsill. Clinging there in the cool, crisp January air, it seemed such a sweet relief from the cruel and punishing heat inside. In an instant, I was sailing down, down through the starlit, frozen morning, past the dark figure of Mr. Brown as he clung for dear life to the bedsheet rope, crashing mercilessly under the stones below, and all was still.
It's all right. I'm on the landing. You can come down now. Wife, answer me! Come down, I say!
Excuse me, sir, you'll have to clear out of here. We've got to get these ladders through.
But my wife, there is still no answer from the window where she stood. Surely she must have been rescued. Perhaps you've seen her.
I'm sorry, sir, no woman's been saved yet.
Yes. See, not to worry. Not to worry. Turns a horse is up to that window. No. There's a woman trying to escape.
Yeah, it's the fifth floor and the ladders will never reach.
There was no chance for rational thought. Not in those last few panicked moments. By the time we were aware of the flames, they were nearly consuming us. My wife leapt from the bed, her bedclothes blackened by smoke and soot and clinging with sweat. She tore to the window and threw open the curtains that had already begun to smolder. She turned back only for a minute, her eyes filled with terror and desperation. She looked straight through me as if she no longer recognized me, her mind driven to madness by the relentless blaze. She stepped backwards, her eyes still dully focused on the hungry flames behind me. Half jumping, half falling, she disappeared from the windowsill. I ran to the window in time to see her white-clad body strike the balcony railing and then crumple before hitting the pavement below.
Hold on, mister. Another ladder's coming. Just hold on.
I looked down in a daze to the street below. There were several men carrying the limp and broken form of a woman in a soot-stained nightgown soaked with blood toward the American Express office. My wife. Everything around me went black. I could see nothing, taste nothing, smell nothing but the lumid, acrid smoke. Only the sounds of the street below remained. I realized that I could hear voices.
Jump,
dear God,
jump,
were they calling to me?
Jump!
No, not hold on, it's too risky. Please, just hold on.
In the flickering orange glow, I could see that there were a handful of men holding tightly to a rescue canvas below me. Their eyes turned expectantly up toward my window.
Jump!
I plunged toward the street. It was so strange what went through my mind as my body dropped toward the waiting canvas. I thought of climbing into bed with my wife the night before, kissing her goodnight, wrapping my arms around her, the soft white cotton folds of her nightgown, breathing in the sweet smell of lavender in her loosely braided hair. A faint smile crossed my lips as the canvas tore from the hands of the stricken men below. The canvas billowed just out of reach and then settled across my prone body.
I doubt she'll survive. Someone get him to the American Express office. It's where they took the women.
As they began to load me onto a waiting stretcher, I could feel a single tear slide down my cheek and turn cold in the icy morning air. The smile now frozen on my lips would remain as they gently lifted me off the stretcher at the makeshift hospital ward in the American Express office. I was laid next to the woman I had loved so much in life. Reaching for her hand, I drew one last labored breath. Lavender.
Kate! Kate, can you hear me?
William Linehan saved four more terrified souls who had been wandering hopelessly in the halls and stairwells before he finally made it to the servant girl's quarters on the fifth floor and began to pound on the doors of the servant girls.
Girls, follow me. There's no time. Come on. This way. Follow me. Quickly now, all of you.
With his jacket over his nose and mouth, William led the charge of frantic women down the back stairwell through the impossible wall of heat and smoke to safety. But when he turned around and stared through the haze, He found that only one of the girls had followed him down.
Where are they? Where's Kate?
They went through the windows. Kate is trying to save them.
Oh, no, 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 no.
My dear brother raced to the alley below the servant girls' quarters to see if there was any way to help from below. Cinders from a loft fell upon his neck and face as he searched the writhing mass of frenzied girls in the fifth floor windows. Their faces so streaked with tears and ash that he couldn't tell one from another.
Oh, no, no. This cannot be. This nightmare cannot be.
The first girl had already jumped. Wild panic had overtaken them all as they wrestled for bits of space in the window. And one by one, they leapt to a mangled, hideous death in the alley below. Their bodies hitting the cold stones with a reverberating concussion that William could feel pulsing through his entire body.
Firemen! Firemen, here! Bring a ladder! Bring a ladder, please! Oh, no, that ladder won't reach. There! The window of the building across the alley. We can make a bridge. Please, girls, you don't have to jump. A ladder's coming. You'll be saved.
The fireman made haste to the next building and hoisted the ladder across to pull the woman to safety. But it was too late for many of the horror-stricken creatures who were not aware that they were so close to being saved. 11 women in all plunged from the windows and lay broken and bloody in the alley, just as rescue was mere heartbeats away. William had to turn away from the grisly scene in the alley and trust that I would find my way to safety. I could see him from the window as he rushed back into the flames.
His voice sounded like an angel. At first I thought that I was already dead and gone to heaven when I heard it. Like so many of the dead and dying, I was taken to the American Express office across the street after jumping from the burning hotel. William Dodsworth, who was employed there, had taken it upon himself to give any amount of comfort to the foreordained in their final moments. I recognized the sweet man who had smiled so merrily and winked at my husband, John, as we sent a telegram announcing our marriage to my sister in Louisville. Was that only just yesterday? Mr. Dodsworth placed a pillow under my head and gently stroked the scorched curls that pressed themselves to my blistered and blackened face, like the veil I'd worn the day before. The wedding night blush on my cheek was replaced by horrible burns. He whispered soothingly that everything would be all right soon. I closed my eyes just for a moment, and the pain was gone.
This is she.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but this body's already been identified as one of the serving girls from the hotel.
Oh.
Could it be this poor woman is the one you seek?
That is her hair. Those her eyes. And the nose is like Gertrude's. No. No, it can't be her, though. For she had small hands and a bright new wedding band.
It was my elderly mother-in-law, Anna Donahoe. I could see her so clearly. It was as if I could reach out and touch her. And yet she didn't stir when I called out to her. Surrounded by moans of agony, she moved from one charred unfortunate to the next, grieving with fresh tears as she held the hands of women scorched about the face and head, searching for some sign of her son's new bride. Finally, she stood over me and took my small, lifeless hand to her lips. She placed a tender kiss upon the shining gold band.
This is she.
Mr. Dodsworth.
Hmm?
Mr. Dodsworth, I think you had better come over here. I believe this man is in a dying condition. Isn't there anything that we can do for him?
Do you know his name?
Yes, he was conscious when they brought him in. His name is Judson Hugh. It seems he is the nephew of Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, the poor couple that expired, hand in hand, here earlier this morning.
Oh, have we made any attempt to contact the family?
We can't be sure if he has any other family, Mr. Dodsworth. He asked me to call Northwestern National Insurance Company. Mr. James, the secretary, is on his way presently. Mr. Hugh is unfortunately quite unable to speak now.
I'll stay with him until Mr. James arrives. The poor man should not have to die alone. Not if I can help it anyway.
I willed the useless, swollen tongue inside my parched mouth to speak. Not a word. Only a wrenching moan and the sound of my thick, wheezing breaths. Waves of prickling heat swept over the burned flesh of my limbs, chest and face. Still, this was better. So much better than the miserable combination of the snow and falling embers that had assaulted me as I lay face down on the third floor balcony. Unable to move, unable to call out to the frantic, trampling humanity below me. Rescue, it seems, is for the living, and I had been left for dead.
Right this way, Mr. James.
Is this he? Is this Mr. Judson Hugh?
Yes. His face has been badly burned.
Do you know him well, Mr. James?
No, I really don't. His position as an agent for the company required him to travel quite frequently. He would come to the office from time to time when it was necessary. I suppose he was here for just such an occasion.
It seems such a happy coincidence that my aunt and uncle had business in the city at precisely the time I was due to call upon the Milwaukee office myself. We managed to secure adjacent rooms at the Newhall House Hotel and spent the evening in each other's jocular company before returning to our rooms on the fifth floor, near the elevator, I remember. Next thing I knew, a terrible sensation of crushing weight upon my chest awoke me, and I lay for a moment dazed and half smothered. I heard a clock strike four. Groping to the door, I opened it. The rush of flame and heated air, not smoke alone, but scorching, burning air met me, taking away my breath, well nigh my senses. Realizing the extent of my peril, I fled to the window and climbed quickly to the ornamental cap of the fourth floor window below me. There I sat astride it and tried helplessly to shield my head and neck from the flames that were already sweeping from the deserted room above me. Before any effort of rescue could be made on my behalf, fire exploded from the window I was sitting atop. Some searing flames leaping out and upward about me. What else could I do but let go and allow myself to plummet fatally toward the balcony below? I laid there and gratefully allowed my mind to wander far away from the howling agony. I was home in Maroa, Illinois. My wife humming absently in the kitchen as she washed the supper dishes. My giggling baby boy happily squeezing my finger with his plump little hand as I bounce him on my knee. She turns to watch us and smiles. Such a pretty smile. Dimpled cheeks just like our son.
Does he have any family, Mr. James? Anyone that we should call?
Perhaps. There must be some record back at the office. I'm not sure.
Quiet. He's trying to speak.
Maroa. Wife. Baby.
When I watched my brother William return to the rage and fire inside the hotel, I feared it would be the last time I'd ever see him. Through the swirling blackness, William pressed on through the hallways filled with unearthly shrieks of despair. People, transformed by the madness of the consuming flames, were hurling themselves against walls and falling dazed to the floor. Those who found themselves thrown to the ground were trampled by the others who endeavored to find an exit. In the midst of the panic, William grasped the hands of a man desperately groping along the baseboards and firmly pulled him to his feet.
Here, this way. This way.
They rushed onward, grabbing another disoriented guest along the way.
In the midst of their flight, they hurtled over the body of a woman curled up on the stairs.
No, don't step on her. That woman's dead.
Again and again, William returned to the burning building until his own burned hands and arms and the untenable air forced him outside to watch our home and livelihood melt away before his eyes. His thoughts soon turned to me.
Kate! Kate! Where are you? Has anyone seen my sister Kate?
He ran through the mass of wandering wounded, those in shock, those who were attending them. Corpses grimly waiting to be removed still littered the alleyway.
Kate!
William!
Tom! Tom, have you seen my sister? She was upstairs in the servants' quarters trying to help get the girls out. She must have been rescued. Do you know where she is?
Look, William! The ladder across the alley has been moved to another floor!
No, she must be safe. I'd never forgive myself if something happened to her, Tom. Mary! Mary, saints preserve us. Were you with Kate? Did she come across the ladder bridge with you? Is she safe?
No, they're all gone. They are all gone.
Please, Mary, I must know. Is Kate alive?
I don't know. There were only a few of us in my room. We knelt and we prayed out loud for salvation, but out of all the other rooms, the firemen, they crashed in through our window and the ladder couldn't pull us out. So many others, William, so many others didn't. They couldn't.
I know, Mary, I know. There, girl. Shh, shh, shh. Tom, find a blanket for this poor girl, will you? She's barely dressed. I've got to go find Kate.
I only left the window for a moment to check one last time for any girls struck senseless or cowering in the corners. When I returned, the ladder was gone. I waved my arms above my head frantically, but the firemen were otherwise occupied and the tremendous roar of the fire drowned out my plaintive cries. Hands grasping the window frame, I began to feel the floor give way beneath me. Intense heat and stifling smoke from below began to curl up from the cracks in the floor and singe my bare legs and feet. All was lost. Oh, that's when I saw him. William Linehan, looking right at me from the alley below. I saw his expression fade from relief to horror when he realized my perilous position.
Bring the ladder back. There's a woman trapped up there. Please, you must bring the ladder back. Help her. Kate, hold on.
Oh,
there's no time for the ladder. Bring out the canvas, damn you.
Kate, you'll have to jump, love. Kate, just jump, my girl. You'll die if you stay up there, love. It's time to come down. I'll be here waiting for you. Kate, you have to jump now.
William's lips moved, but I couldn't hear what he called up to me as the cruel wind whipped my hair and tore at my nightgown. I stepped up to the windowsill and saw my brother cross himself and clasp his hands in feverish prayer with his eyes turned all the while to me.
Dear Lord in heaven, we throw ourselves at your mercy. Please hold my sister in your hands and keep her safe. I beg of you, have mercy on her precious soul, Lord. Have mercy.
I let my bare, blistered feet slip from the window ledge and vaulted toward the waiting canvas. The height was too great, and the canvas ripped clean through, allowing my body to make a brutal impact with the stones below.
Oh, God. Here, get her to the American Express office. Quickly now, gently, she needs to lie down.
They rushed me inside the crowded makeshift ward, and I was greeted by the kindly Mr. Dodsworth, who slid a pillow under my head and brought me a thick blanket.
Are you hurt badly then, Kate?
I don't know, brother. I don't know. I'm just so glad that you're alive.
No more glad than I to see you sitting up chattering away like a schoolgirl.
Oh, take my hand, brother. I think I'll rest my eyes for a moment.
There now. You just lie down and rest. They found no evidence of mortal injury. I think that we've seen the worst of it, my girl.
He sat there, silently holding my hand and trying hard to shut out the haunting visions of this terrible morning. So much death and destruction. He almost didn't notice when the steady rise and fall of my chest had
quietly stopped.
No! Do we have any stimulants on hand?
No. It's too late. She is gone.
Oh, no. No. Oh, God. Kate! No!
A crowd is gathering.
Death reminds them that they're alive.
They will never know me.
Never know that I existed.
I am nameless, faceless.
Who will mourn us?
The funeral wagons are lined up already.
To take us away, I suspect.
To take us where?
To the cemetery.
One grave for the many, the lost, the unfortunate.
The unclaimed, the unidentified.
90 souls. Maybe more.
Who will mourn for us?
Shh. It's finally quiet.
Who will remember us?
Try not to think about it.
I remember.
I remember.
Folks, so concludes our show for the evening. Thank you for coming. We hope you enjoyed The New Hall House Fire, Flames from Hell. Written and directed by Amanda Morton. Adapted for radio by Sarah Lack. Produced by Hangman Radio. The 1894 players are Victoria Hudziak, Ruth Arnell, Sarah Lack, Jim Ozarski, Mac Mankiller, and Randall T. Anderson. Our sound technician is Joe Hartke from Mad Manor Studios in Madison. Thank you, Shaker Cigar Bar Milwaukee, for hosting us. And to the Shaker's House Orchestra for their wonderful charts, adaptations, and performance. Sir Pinkerton and the Magnificence. Sir Pinkerton and the Magnificence can be seen and heard the first Friday of each month at the Miramar Theater performing in the Dead Man's Carnival, and every third Thursday here at Shaker's. Thank you.
You better watch where you're walking. Yes, you best beware. The things around, they want you in the ground. Oh, the things down there. Oh, those things down there. Oh, those things down there.
That was The New Hall House, Flames from Hell, from Hangman Radio. For more episodes and information, visit their website at hangmanradio.com. And that's it for our show tonight. Check us out at midnightaudiotheater.com, send an email to midnightaudiotheater@gmail.com, or check us out on our Facebook page. We'll be back again next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This is 90.5 FM and HD WCBE Columbus, and 106.3 FM in Newark. Up next, it's the BBC World News.